Palestine Film Unit, but financed by the Jordanian Ministry of Culture as a kind of propaganda, morale-boosting propaganda after the humiliating defeat of the Arab nations in the Six-Day War. First section, it's just showing you the civilian life in parts of Jerusalem. Let's say the peaceful civilian life of Palestinian people. But I just want to, yes, okay. So, I mean, obviously they've started showing images of the Palestinian refugees, and some of the fighters, but what else do you notice? Like, what's this? What do you think the message that they're trying to build here is? Yes?
When we look at it just from the text, it's like from the theological point of view, it makes a lot of sense because it's a city that unifies all three biggest religions, and they try to make that link, and they try to link it to like the values of these religions. I think that's a metaphor for this.
Yeah, and I would say you're absolutely right. I mean, the theological, you know, religious symbols are being intercut into this film. And that's very intentional, I think, because part of the construction of a Palestinian identity, which, and a Palestinian image that these filmmakers sought to create, was one that had to be inclusive, yes? And of course, Palestinian society is not just of one religion, but it is primarily, let's say, okay, Christianity and Islam. But of course, politically, this is also important because it puts itself against the Zionist ideology, which is exclusively Jewish, yes? A kind of Jewish nationalism, if you like. So what it's saying is, what they're trying to communicate is the Palestinian cause is one that's inclusive and one of coexistence, yes? The Palestinian people are one of coexistence and inclusivity, which is in contrast to the Zionist project, yes, which is about expelling non-Jewish population from land and... Also, what's important here in this specific film is this film was intended for Arab audiences. Yes, go ahead.
I think also they oppose themselves against the image that the westernized world has from Arabs, that they only think about their own religion. And I don't know if this was intentional or not, but it seems like a really smart decision to show this inclusivity.
Absolutely. I would say the struggle against this Western idea of Arabs being Islamic fundamentalists is more of a later struggle. From this time, in this particular context, that narrative wasn't so developed in the Western world. Yes. But this is more about, in this specific film, this is more about establishing the, you know, a true Palestinian image, I'd say. Yes. And then we have the kind of the build-up to, this is the build-up of hope, you know, like the Palestinian militants are coming to liberate their land, you know. So it can be considered a propaganda film, yes. In that time. I would also like to show you an example. Yes.
Another question about this movie. You said it was financed by the state.
Yeah, by the Jordanian, Jordanian Ministry of Culture.
But
yes.
Because the manifesto that was from another time, and country obviously says.
Yeah.
That
right.
Avoid that,
yeah. Sure. So what happened is the Palestine Film Unit existed outside of a state system, outside of a state structure, and the footage that was generally shot, or the photographs that were shot, was done outside of any state financing. But after the Six-Day War and the humiliation of the Arab states in losing that war, the Jordanian Ministry of Culture decided to finance the creation of a propaganda film using members of the Palestine Film Unit. Yeah. I mean, this is a very specific context, yes? Because the Palestinian cause, at least at that time, was seen as an Arab cause, yes? The pan-Arab cause. I would like to show you a film made by the Italian Communist Party. And this is just an example of how the Palestinian cause became internationalized through the filmmaking process at that time.
piano e vedendo al mondo la sofferenza che sì. Qualcuno comincia a parlarne come della Russia del Medio Oriente. L'esercito israeliano è ultramoderno ed efficiente. La sua guerra è rapida e brutale. Napalm è fosforo bianco.
Okay, so obviously there are some very disturbing images here. But what did you notice about some of the footage you saw here? Yes.
It was the same footage from the film we've seen before.
Exactly, yes. The same footage is being used in this film as the film we saw prior. So I just showed you this extract from this Italian-made film just to demonstrate how the footage created by the Palestine Film Unit was being utilized by filmmakers in Europe, yeah? So this is the very literal process that was taking place in the creation of a Palestinian image and the sharing of the Palestine Film Unit's archives or stock footage with European filmmakers. European leftist filmmakers and leftist organizations. Okay. So, this is important. So it, although Third Cinema was primarily about the Third World and Third World liberation, there were sections of European, parts of European filmmaking and European filmmakers began to be more explicitly political around the same time. And there was certainly some influence coming from the Third World here. And an obvious illustration of this are the events that took place in France in 1968. I'm going to assume that most of you are familiar with these events, right? So, I mean, just to briefly run you through it. The events of May 1968 started off with student protests against American imperialism, France's involvement with the Americans in the war in Vietnam, and more local grievances related to university bureaucracy and traditional institutions, etc. Students occupied some university buildings, then the police were called in, they surrounded the buildings, they forcibly evicted the students into the street, and then there was the escalation of confrontations between students, mainly from the Sorbonne, and the police. And it basically turned into a kind of war on the streets of Paris, yes. But later on, these protests were joined by workers, and in fact students started to go on strike in solidarity with workers' strikes that were happening at the same time. So it became a kind of workers and students movement against the French state and against police oppression, which at that time was quite brutal. And in this context of the May 68 events, a group of French filmmakers got together very quickly in a very urgent way, and they decided to collaborate on the creation of an agitational film that would inspire and provoke more people to join in the workers and students uprising. And they released a film very quickly called Cinétract. Okay, and I'll just take you through it now. Cinétract, as I mentioned, was made by multiple French filmmakers, so it was collectivist. Crucially, when you watch the film, you will not see any credits for any of the filmmakers. Each filmmaker worked on a particular section of the film, but we don't know which filmmaker made each section of the film, because they were not credited. We might be able to guess which filmmaker made each section. If you're familiar with the French New Wave cinema, you might be able to detect the style of one filmmaker in one section. But in general, they were not credited. And this is important because it's a manifestation of the collectivist ethos in which the film was made, which is also directly correspondent with one of the third cinema manifesto ideas, in that films, these revolutionary films, could and would most likely be collectivist in nature. I mentioned it was made to agitate, so the Cinétracte was shown as well non-commercially. It was shown in university buildings to students, student assemblies. It was projected on a 16mm projector. And this is because in those days, universities had 16mm projectors, not digital ones. But the point is that they were accessible, yes? These beamers or projectors were accessible to... they were already in universities, so the filmmakers were making use of what they had access to. It was also shown in factories to workers on strike. And the point is, when you watching the films, it was tantamount to political action, yes? So you watch the film, you become agitated, you become inspired to join the insurrection. The film was also made as a response to the state, French state censorship, and the French state's own propaganda at that time. So it was an alternative to what was being shown on television screens. And importantly, the film was made on the cheap. Cinétracte is basically a series of still photographs, yeah, not moving image, still photographs that were just edited together. So stuff like this. One of the techniques they also used was things like this. So like the Argentinian film we saw, they would also bring already existing material, already existing images and photographs, and then subvert them in some way. So here, for example, we have a commercial image that was taken, and then they added their own, the filmmakers added their own text to it to subvert the original intended meaning of the image. Does anyone know what we call this technique? When you take a cultural product or an image and then you change the meaning of it in some way.
There's a detournement?
Yes, exactly. Detournement. So detournement, those of you who speak French, detournement means hijacking. So, or rerouting. Yes, so they would basically take images and hijack these images to change their meaning. And detournement was something spoken about specifically by the... by this collective of theorists and artists known as the Situationists. But detournement became something that was used in other militant films in other contexts. And I'd like to show you an example now. This is just an extract from the Cinétracte film. There's no sound, but so the images are important, yeah. Okay, so I mean here, these were images taken at a memorial or funeral procession for a young member of the French Communist Party who people believe was killed by the police at the time. But yeah, that's an example of the Cinetracht film. I also want to show you something from Japan now. So, as well, in that period, Japan was in a situation of unrest, let's say. It had its own context of... yes, in its own context, there were riots and clashes between leftist movements and students against the authorities. But I want to show you an extract of a film made by two Japanese filmmakers who traveled to Lebanon in 1970. And when they were in Lebanon, they went there with the intention of making a documentary about the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, who at that time were based in camps in Lebanon. And they met up, these Japanese filmmakers made contact with a Japanese radical militant called Fusako Shigenobu. Fusako Shigenobu was the founder of an organization called the Japanese Red Army. And she was based in Lebanon at that time, in the Palestinian refugee camps. So these two filmmakers ended up becoming part of the Japanese Red Army. And they made this film called Red Army PFLP, Declaration of World War. I'm just going to show you the opening section of this film. And then we'll see how it interacts with the third cinema ideology and more broadly third world liberation. Specific opening of the film because it's another example of détournement, as I mentioned earlier on, but maybe in a less conventional way. Would anyone like to explain how that opening section is an example of détournement? What do we see in these images? What is this? Where do these images come from, do you think?
Jordan.
Yeah, some of them were filmed in Jordan. But where, if we imagine this is 1970, and we have these images, what, yes?
Yeah, maybe like a news program on TV?
Exactly, yes, precisely. So these images come from news, yeah? It's all news footage. So what these filmmakers did is they edited all this different bits of news footage together. So the hijackings of Pan-American planes by the Popular Front for Liberation of Palestine, the hijacking of Japan Airlines plane. I think these are Japanese. Is this Japanese military? Riot police. So all sorts of different news footage they've edited together. But how are they presenting this footage?
As a propaganda film.
Yes. But whose propaganda film?
The revolutionaries.
Yes, exactly. So what they've done, this is a détournement. This is a détournement in a sense, because they've hijacked the footage, yes? They've got this footage from television, for example, and instead of, in television, on the news broadcast, it would have been broadcast as a crisis, as terrorism, as Japan Airlines flight was hijacked by terrorists, awful. But these filmmakers are presenting it as something to celebrate, yeah? Revolutionary action, the fulfillment of a global revolution through these actions. Yeah, I mean, we could go on. I believe this film may be, it's not confirmed yet, but this film could be shown, may be shown here later on. Is that correct?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, you'll be able to see it in a high definition. Yeah, this is just from YouTube, so it's a bit lo-fi.
One thing I didn't understand is,
yes,
this real footage of the hijackings, or is this footage of another situation that has been hijacked with text?
Oh no, these are real hijackings.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, in particular, there are two specific incidents. One of them is the hijacking of a Japan Airlines flight by members of the Red Army. And the other one was footage of the hijacking of Pan American Airlines. I think four airplanes were hijacked by the PFLP, and three of them were flown to an airstrip in Jordan, which at that time was under the control of the PFLP.